And now, part two of On the Town with Mark Stein.
Welcome back to our special on the music of Paul Simon. In part two, I talked to Paul Simon about the art of songwriting.
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey.
I guess that song's as famous as any song to emerge from the late 1960s. It was written for the Mike Nichols film, The Graduate. Mike Nichols was a big Simon & Garfunkel fan, and he asked Paul Simon to write some new songs for the picture. Paul Simon came to him. Paul Simon didn't really get around to it, and eventually came to him with a kind of fragment, and he said, I'm not sure whether this song is about Mrs. Robinson or about Mrs. Roosevelt. And Mike Nichols said to him, we're making a movie here. It's about Mrs. Robinson, okay? So it became Mrs. Robinson. But that's a good example of how Paul Simon writes in a slightly different way from a conventional songwriter. Nevertheless, those lines, some of the lines of that song, Where Have You Gone, Joe DiMaggio, have planted themselves in the language. You often hear that, not just on sports columns in newspapers, but as headlines in other sections of the newspaper too. That's usually a good sign on whether a line of lyric has planted itself in the language when newspaper editors start using it as a kind of recognizable shorthand for their readers. Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? As I said, in the first part of our Paul Simon special, we didn't really talk about songwriting a lot. We were talking about his childhood. He was driving me around Queens. He was discussing the early influences, musical influences. He was showing me the parking lot where he first heard Elvis, all that kind of thing. So for this part two, this second part of our special, I thought we'd focus with some snapshots of Paul Simon's views on songwriting. As I said, I've interviewed him several times over the years, and he's had kind of a couple of insights, a couple of observations on songwriting, on music, lyrics, harmony, that I've found very interesting and of broader application. So we're going to concentrate on those. The first time I interviewed him, I went through a ton of old interview material, and I was mindful of the traps that rock critics fall into. He was known when he first emerged as the voice of an alienated generation. I mean, who wasn't the voice of an alienated generation in those days? I don't think Lawrence Welk was, but aside from that, pretty much everyone who was making music in the 60s was. So I wanted to steer clear of all those traps. He managed to steer clear of them too. You know, he's supposed to be a serious guy. But one time when we talked about the whole alienation thing, I began by reminding him of this little scene. This is Paul Simon in the 1970s on Saturday Night Live, I think the Thanksgiving edition, dressed up as a turkey in order to perform Still Crazy After All These Years. Paul Simon on Saturday Night Live in a turkey suit.
And we talked about some old times, and we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all.
Oh, still crazy. Okay. Hi.
Forget it, Richard. You know, I said when the turkey concept was first brought up, I said there's a very good chance I'm going to end up looking stupid if I come out wearing it. I mean, everyone said, oh, it's Thanksgiving, go ahead, you know. I felt it was not in any way in keeping with my image, the lyrics, the box, or any of those songs. They said, hey, you know, you take yourself so seriously. Why don't you stop taking yourself so seriously for a while, loosen up a little bit, and maybe people will laugh. You want to be Mr. Alienation? You can be Mr. Alienation. Well, I didn't want to be Mr. Alienation. I want to be a regular guy, but I feel this has just been a disaster.
I mean, I obviously didn't call myself Mr. Alienation. That's, you know, you have to remember that the 60s was just not only a period of where certain songwriters started to come of age. It was also the period where rock criticism started to come of age. So you had the same generation of people who were writing songs were now graduating from college as journalism majors, and they were writing for magazines, Rolling Stone. And so that was the criticism was as sophomoric as the writing was.
Very true, and it often missed the real quality of those songs. Here's Still Crazy After All Those Years. Without the turkey suit.
I met my old lover on the street last night. She seemed so glad to see me. I just smiled. And we talked about some old times. And we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy. I'm not the kind of man who tends to socialize. I seem to lean on old familiar ways. And I ain't no fool for love songs that whisper in my ears. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy.
Is that how it was written?
It was written on the guitar, but it's the record is a piano song, just as Bridge Over Troubled Water was written on the guitar, but it's a piano. I've only written one song on the piano, and that's a song called Nobody from my One Trick Pony. Otherwise, they're all written on guitar, but I play guitar in a pianistic style. When I'm writing those kind of ballads, I'm not kind of just strumming a G chord. It may be important that I have the third in the bass or the fifth in the bass, and I'm writing the bass line and the moving tones at the same time that I'm making up the melody. You know, I'm shaping the harmony. So the harmony is a little bit more complex than it would be on a a 3 or 4 chord rhythm song.
Still crazy. Still crazy. Still crazy after all these years.
You worry that you perhaps expose a bit too much of yourself on those records?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think about it. It makes me uncomfortable, but then I think there's really not that much difference between my life and anybody else's life. So it doesn't matter if I take the specifics of my life. It's not the specifics that the song is about anyway. It's a love song is, it doesn't matter. It's about the feeling of love. It's not about the specific relationship, I don't think.
That's so obviously true when you point it out, but very, very few songwriters ever express it quite that clearly. Lots of people who aren't Paul Simon love that song. I once saw Rosemary Clooney sing it, and I said to her afterwards that it didn't seem like an obvious song for Rosie Clooney. And she said to me, oh, I love that song, I love that song. She did. Here's Rosemary Clooney singing 4 in the Morning, Cramped Out Yawning.
In the morning, crept out, yawning, longing my life away. I'll never worry, why should I? It's all gonna fade. The cars. I fear I'll do some damage one fine day. But I would not be convicted by a jury of my peers. Still crazy after all these years. Still crazy, still crazy, still crazy after all these years.
Despite what Paul Simon said about the universality of songs, about the sentiment, the feeling being what's important as opposed to the specifics of the lyric, sometimes the lyrics can get a bit too specific. Here's a song that he particularly likes, and I also quite like. It has a kind of title alone that would prevent it becoming a standard. René and Georgette Magritte with Their Dog After the War. That's the title of the song. And just to add another wrinkle to it, the kind of hook of the song involves René and Georgette Magritte sharing Paul Simon's enthusiasm for doo-wop groups of the 1950s. The Moonglows, the Orioles, the Penguins, and the Five Saturns.
René and Georgette Magritte with Their Dog After the War returned to their hotel suite and they unlocked the door. Easily losing their evening clothes, they danced by the light of the moon to the pale forbidden music they've been longing for. Renee and George Edmund Magritte with their dog after the
Renee and Georgette Magritte with their dog after the war is a song that I like a lot, personally. I think it's one of my best songs. But to be realistic about it, the people that have heard of Magritte haven't heard of the Penguins and the Moonglows and the Orioles and the Five Satins. And people have heard of the Five Satins and the Penguins and the Moonglows and the Orioles probably haven't a clue about who Magritte is. So it's a very small audience that I'm addressing. I'm writing about a surrealist painter, so it's really not a great leap of the imagination to write a surrealist song. The only sort of leap that was erroneous is there is to assume that anybody's going to know what I'm talking about.
When they wake up, they will find all their personal belongings have intertwined. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Renee and Georgette Magritte with their dog after the war. We're dining with the power elite, and they looked in their bedroom drawer. And what do you think? They have hidden away in the cabinet cold of their hearts. The penguins, the moon glows, the Orioles, and the Five Satins.
I mentioned in part one that when my big TV special with Paul Simon aired on American television, one of the critics, I think, I'm pretty sure it was the Philadelphia Inquirer, talked about how Paul Simon has great fun mocking the pompous BBC interviewer. And it's true, he did have a kind of drolly, teasing way with me at moments. It's a pity that this special is just audio, because you should see his face when I ask him this question, positing that a song of his called Song About the Moon is not really a song about the moon. It's about writing a song about the moon. And you should see in the long pause that follows, the teasing smile that comes over Paul Simon's face before he composes himself for his poker-faced answer.
What about a song like Song About the Moon, which is... It takes a kind of conventional subject of popular song, and then, but instead of being a song about the moon, it's a song about the moon. Is that just sort of playing with conventions there?
I guess it was a way of writing a song about the moon.
If you want to write a song about the moon, walk along the craters of the afternoon. When the shadows are deep and the light is alien, and gravity leaps like a knife off the pavement, and you want to write a song about the moon, you want to write a spiritual tune. The nine and Preston, a song about the moon.
Something that does seem, at least in form, to be a kind of fun song to write, something like 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. Was that also slow, rather, or did that come...
I think that was faster. I mean, it didn't take a long time to make up the chorus. All those rhymes, you know. But that was for my son when he was a little boy. Teaching them about rhymes.
Right. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. 50 ways to leave your lover. You just slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, stand. You don't need to be coy, Roy. Just get yourself free. Or you hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free. Slip out the back chair, make a new plan, stand. You don't need to be coy, bro. You just listen to me. Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free.
Do you think perhaps the lyricists who are famous as lyricists, perhaps they concentrated too much on form rather than content? I mean, famous lyricists are flamboyant rhymesters like Cole Porter.
Well, that was a style, you know. That was a style that was associated with sophisticated writing. That was what sophisticated writing was then, and so that's, you know, unusual rhymes were considered... witty. And I don't think we would think that way today. We think other things are witty now. So, I mean, what's witty changes from generation to generation. In the context of those days, I mean, that writing was the tops. It's the... whatever it
as
is.
As the song says.
Yeah. It's the Eiffel Tower.
Many's the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. Oh, but I'm all...
It's a funny thing, though, that as the years go by, there are so few new entrants to what we call now the Great American Songbook, the Irving Berlins and Cole Porters and so on, that a lot of the rock guys find themselves, for one or other reason, being co-opted into that pantheon. Back in the 80s, there was a big, I think it was the centenary of the Statue of Liberty, and they had a big ceremony to mark the centenary of the Statue of Liberty. And they had a lot of music there, and they played things that you might think are obvious, like Irving Berlin's God Bless America, but they also played Paul Simon's American Tune, which has a slightly... Paul Simon's American Tune, which has a slightly more ambivalent relationship with national patriotism than Irving Berlin's song does. In the times I interviewed him, we didn't talk a lot about politics and that sort of thing because I didn't feel, with my general disposition or his, it was particularly useful. So I thought we should include this just as a sense of where he's coming from in these issues.
Oh, but I'm all right, I'm all right. I'm just weary to my bones.
It is a song about disillusionment. It was written after Nixon was elected. It bothers me whenever I think that the definition of American is not, doesn't include everybody, doesn't include the minorities equally. And whenever I feel that we're in a time that's where that's the case, then it's reactionary to me, and it makes me uncomfortable. And I think that's the case today.
High up above, my eyes could clearly see the Statue of Liberty sailing away to sea. And I dreamed I was flying. Well, we come on the ship they call the Mayflower. We come on the ship that sails the moon. We come in the ages most uncertain hours and sing an American tune. Oh, and it's all right. It's all right. tomorrow's gonna be another working day. I'm trying to get some rest. That's all I've tried, get some rest.
I mentioned that we didn't talk a lot about politics. One time we did. I was in the elevator in the Brill Building going down when he to go off somewhere, when he asked me if I'd read Tom Wolfe's then new book. This was the very first time I interviewed him. Tom Wolfe's then new book, Bonfire of the Vanities. As I think I mentioned on one of the Ricochet podcasts, Peter Robinson, Rob Long and I were at the Carlisle Hotel with Tom Wolfe a couple of months ago. And I had the pleasure of telling Tom Wolfe that the first time anyone brought Bonfire of the Vanities to my attention was Paul Simon in an elevator. And I said to Tom Wolfe, Paul Simon had said to me, you know, that book's not going to go anywhere. Tom Wolfe thinks he knows New York. He doesn't know New York. He's not always that sound a judge of his own work either. One of my favourite Paul Simon albums is called Hearts and Bones. It was actually his biggest flop, and I asked him why this was, and he gave me an answer that I think is really quite interesting.
On all my albums, I always start with, what will be the rhythm section that I'm going to work with? What will be the sound of the rhythm section? And on the most successful albums, there's usually a rhythm section that has a certain cohesiveness and a certain sound and a certain sparkle. And Hearts and Bones is a notable exception to that. And I think the first thing that you hear is the track. And if the song has if the song has deeper meanings, it's all right if the track is accessible. I mean, I think that Graceland, the song Graceland, is exactly the same as the song Hearts and Bones. I mean, it is the continuation of the same story. It's the exact same subject matter. And one is kind of a cult, you know, favorite, and the other one won a Grammy for Record of the Year. It's the track, it's the rhythm section.
It's the track, it's the rhythm. And that's one of the big differences between the Paul Simon of Simon and Garfunkel and Paul Simon without Garfunkel.
When I began my solo albums, I went to the rhythms that I was interested in. With Simon and Garfunkel, the tendency was to go to balance because he was a great balance singer and he didn't like to sing rhythm. But I was neither a great balance singer nor a great rhythm singer, and I liked rhythm, so that's where I went.
Mother and child reunion is only emotion.
Smothering and Child Reunion, when I went to Kingston, I went down to cut that as a ska record. And the musicians there said, no, ska is out. it's reggae. That's the first I heard of. That's the first time I heard the term reggae.
And how did you hear it then as a ska song? What would have been the what would be the difference if Mother and Child Reunion had been made as a ska record?
Oh, it would be like. Let's see, that's not the key though. Whoa. Was ska. Well, that was the melody in ska.
There is this thing that some people think, you know, big mainstream singer feels like a change. He goes and sort of dabbles his toes in exotic waters for a bit. Have you run up against that kind of criticism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. Particularly with Graceland, I did. I think it's very simple. It works musically or it doesn't. I mean, music is a free-floating idea, and it's available to everybody for everybody's enjoyment. And if you can make something musical, that's the definition of it. The work is what counts.
Mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what did mama saw? It was against the law.
And with me and Julio, how did that come about? How was that born?
I don't remember that one really clearly. I think I wrote that rhythm. And I think I really liked the idea of getting the name Julio into a pop song. And as for the rest of it, it was just a fantasy song. I'm not sure that it meant anything. Although there was a sort of a famous interpretation of it here by Truman Capote that said it was all about a homosexual experience in a schoolyard.
What, that you'd had or he'd had?
Well, it certainly wasn't one that I'd had. Right? I don't know that it was one, but that's what he thought the song was about.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Before this, and before all these years of writing, I wrote my lyrics down on a piece of paper or the back of an envelope, or wrote it in my head, and I really don't have any record of how I wrote the songs. So I came up with a way of organizing my lyric writing.
So these days, Paul Simon charts his lyrics on Legal Pads, the development of the lyrics. He once took me through the title song of Hearts and Bones, which began life on July 13th, 1982, as a song called Into the Liquid Unknown. And it was a fairly tortuous process between his original draft, Into the Liquid Unknown, and the song that became known as Hearts and Bones, starting with the very first words, one and one half wandering Jews. And Paul Simon explained to me that it was one and one half Wandering Jews, because the song was about him and he's Jewish, and his then wife Carrie Fisher was the daughter of Eddie Fisher, who's also Jewish, and Debbie Reynolds, who's not, hence one and one half Wandering Jews. So we spent about 10 minutes deconstructing just five words, but I felt on top of them and was ready to move on. And then Paul Simon said to me, but it's also a reference to the flower. And I go, pardon? He goes, the flower called Wandering Jew. And I go, well, there's a flower. And he goes, yeah. And there's a whole lot of different things going on. So here's part of my conversation with Paul Simon about how Into the Liquid Unknown became Hearts and Bones.
The preferable beginning has this angle to it. Yeah. You know, not this angle or like this angle. Then you're really in trouble. The song's going to end right away. Or if it's like this, there's no way to expand it. But if you go like this, the song can go anywhere. And that's good in the beginning.
One and one half wandering Jews.
12 days later, the Sangre de Cristo, the Blood of Christ Mountains, self-explained Sangre de Cristo,
blood of Christ,
color of ragweed and bone.
Which is
this is the first time bone comes in. And I'm sure I must have been aware that that this is Yeats, you know, Foul Rag and Bone Shop. So, I mean, that was in there, but I probably backed away, and still Into the Liquid Unknown.
And you're playing with the different. There's two Wandering Jews.
Oh, here's two Wandering Jews, one and one half. Almost. Here's one that says almost two.
Hearts and bones, hearts and bones. And whoa, 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 she said, why don't we drive through the night? We'll wake up down in Mexico. Oh, why? I don't know nothing about no Mexico. Tell me why won't you love me for who I am, where I am? He said, 'cause that's not the way the world is, baby.
That's not the way the world is, baby.
This is how I love you, baby.
This is how I love you, baby.
This is how I love you, baby. One and one half wandering Jews return to their natural coasts to resume old acquaintances and step out occasionally. Speculate who had been damaged the most. Easy time will determine if these consolations will be their reward. The arc of a love affair waiting to be restored. You take two bodies and you twirl them into one. Their hearts and their bones, oh, they won't come undone. Hearts and bones, hearts and bones, hearts and bones, hearts and bones. Thank you.
I don't know that I've had a really new idea since the 60s.
Is that so?
Well, Graceland, which, I mean, people think of as a, you know, a departure or an innovation, the idea of working with the music from another culture and trying to find a, you know, a partnership. That's an old idea of mine. And the feelings about love and those feelings, they're not new. They've been there a long time. And the sounds that I like to hear, gospel, black mambazo, homeless, it goes back to that time when I was 13 years old and couldn't find a show on Sunday. What's new is it's a deeper understanding of the idea and a greater sense of control.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot at redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away in my well-lit door. Mr. Beer Melly, Beer Melly, get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty. Betty, when you call me, you can call me out.
There are those who say that rock is a fundamentally immature style and that sooner or later you run up against its limits. Have you found that?
No. No. I don't see why you can't say... I don't see why you can't express yourself in an intelligent and complex way with rhythm. And that's what rock is. It's rhythm. I mean, I know it can be done. We all know songs that have wonderful lyrics and are very rhythmical and... It's hard, of course, but it can be done, and that's a certain kind of achievement in rock, and it's pretty rare. But it can be done, and it gives you a certain pleasure that you can get from that you won't get from anything else, really.
I wonder if he'd feel quite that way today. I noticed even then he had some songbooks on the bookcase in his office, and they were all the old guys. There was the Jerome Kern songbook, there was the Frank Lesser songbook. A few years later, it was the George Gershwin centenary, and Paul Simon wrote a piece for the New York Times acknowledging that for all their lyrical inventiveness and rhythmic skill, that the rock guys had simply not been able to develop the same harmonic sophistication as the pre-rock songwriters. So he understands, I think, perhaps these days, in a way that he didn't when he said that to me, that there are certain limitations to rock. Nevertheless, on this 70th birthday, Paul Simon can be proud of the contribution he's made to American music, and to that point that Paul Simon made, that it's not the specifics of a situation, it's the feeling in a song. It's the feeling in a song that makes it universal, not the specifics of the lyrics. Whoa, 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 whoa. Happy 70th birthday.
Hey, songwriter, if you want to write a song about a face, think about a photograph that you really can't remember but you can't erase. Wash your hands in dreams and lightning. Cut off your hair, whatever is frightening. If you want to write a song about a face, if you want to write a song about the human race, then na 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 na, yeah, yeah, yeah. Write a song about the moon.
On the Town is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises. All rights reserved.